Hey everybody, welcome to Sentence to Paragraph, a podcast on the space between WordCraft and the writer's life. My name is James Stiegel, and I'm joined today by Molly K. Martin and Darylyn Evans. Hello, can you guys hear me?
Good morning.
Hey, James. Hey, good morning.
Hello, everyone.
Morning. So today we've decided to talk about the worst writing advice you've ever received, which might also tie into bad critiques that you've received in critique groups, because we were all veterans of critique groups. And I think that'll be fun and hopefully not depressing. We're going to do our best to make it fun. But before we do that, let's get into some updates. Who wants to go first? I think Molly went first last time. Darylyn, are you? Or Molly's like champing at the bit to jump in.
Yeah, I'm excited about it. So last time my goal was basically to write every day and to update our spreadsheet of Blood Pact. So I have managed to do that despite my toddler having pink eye. So and being home from school for 2 days.
Oh, no.
So that's, I'm very proud of my accomplishment.
Very nice.
Oh, that's awesome.
Cool.
Yeah, I've managed to do the same thing. I've been able to write every day, even if it's been from 11 p.m. to 1 a.m. But our daughter has still continued to be in kind of sleep regression. So she'll sleep from like 7:30 until maybe 10 p.m. And then we get her back to sleep. And then my wife goes to bed and I can write for a couple hours. But it feels really good to be maintaining that streak. I'm really excited about it. So that's kind of my update. I'm really happy about that. This whole month has been going pretty well for writing. Like the streaks are working very well.
Excellent. How are you feeling in terms of progressing towards your deadline with the book, or should we not bring that part up?
No, I'm in the place where the ending is like running away from me. You know, this project, I was supposed to write 60,000 words and pass it off, and I'm now at 62,000 words, and I think I'm easily going to be at probably 80 by the time I'm done.
Oh, wow.
So we may end up doing some cutting because, you know, there's a sweet spot in there. Like for my genre, space opera, you know, 80,000 is kind of the sweet spot. And then also when you look at audio, you know, every hour you go over the sweet spot is just costing you another $200, right? The cutting. And it's funny because with Kindle Unlimited, like, but there's an incentive there to just write more. You know, and that's not what I'm trying to do, but it's, you have to strike this balance between having a solid, satisfying book that has a good arc, good finish, all that stuff, but doesn't overstay its welcome. So that's kind of what I'm thinking about at this point.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Huh. I hadn't realized that there was so much to think about as one is composing that. The stories in terms of, I guess now that we're really in this audiobook age of really writing towards that as well. So, but also how expensive that is. Wow.
Yeah. And that's cheap, honestly. Like the narrator we're using for my series, she is less expensive than other narrators, but I think $200 is a pretty good planning. $200 per finished hour is a pretty good planning number right now and that would not be for a name narrator. Like if you're going for a Luke Daniels or something like that, you're looking at $500 an hour, if not more.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
So cool. But a narrator can bring their own audience, so it can be a strategy if that's what you want to invest in.
So what I'm hearing is there's potential side hustle here.
What do you mean, like for doing? Well, we're in a weird place with audio. One thing about audio, I think as authors, if you enjoy reading, like it's something I want to do more of. But I don't think I'd ever want to make a business of it. Like I would just use it as kind of a content marketing thing. Cause I do have a novella that I want to read. What I'm finding with the baby is that it's actually harder for me to record at home, like with the personal podcast, because I can't just drop it and go take care of the baby. Like with writing, you know, I can stop whenever and go do something. Like recording audio, I need quiet. I need, like, the dryer can't be running, the washing machine, the dog needs to be put away, the baby needs to be quiet, like all this stuff. And so it's kind of hard to find that time. And then I don't do a lot of the, like, I've got an okay recording setup, but it's not as crazy as it could be, you know? So it, maybe I could sneak it into Audible, but I'm still kind of playing with that. But it's a lot of work. Like, I think people just don't realize how much work it is. And I see these questions all the time. Like, I'd like to record my own audio. Like, have you actually tried that? Have you actually, do you enjoy reading? Do you have a voice for reading? Like, I think with nonfiction, authors can really read their own stuff. But if you don't enjoy reading your stuff and can at least get a little bit of life and energy and passion, like, it's just going to fall like a lead balloon, you know? So, I don't know. You can't use that elevated creative writing voice that a lot of people use when they read. Like,
it doesn't work as far as reading to be important.
Every line is a sentence and a question all at once.
Yeah.
I mean, a statement and a question.
Yes.
Yeah. But that's, I mean, we could talk about that because I think it is something, you know, later in another episode maybe, because when you're reading really specific, I think, about your marketing piece, like before you even start thinking about your story, really, and for me, it helps narrow things down. Like, you know, how do you write a book in this amount of time? Well, there are a lot of constraints on it, you know? And so you're thinking about like the genre you want to hit and how you're going to market it and what you want to make. And all these things go into like very specific decisions about the story, you know? I mean, even to the point of like, this is what the audience likes. They want a female main character who's, you know, saucy and not over, you know, there's all these things that you can, you know, who still kicks ass. And so that's all like,
what it always reminds me of is the bit in, what was it? Total Recall, where he's describing like, what kind of woman do you want? And it's sleazy, but demure. And you're like, okay. Yeah.
Yeah. So, it's like, I mean, and I think of it all kind of like stems from romance. Like, romance is so granular on exactly what you want. Like, you want bear shifter, like bears, not werewolves. You want bears and you want like a pack dynamic and you want like blah, 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 blah. Like, they've gotten so granular with that. And I just see that like moving out into other genres, you know, as people try and hit specific niches to serve audiences, you know? So space opera with giant set pieces and no space battles. I don't like space battles, but I do want, you know, political intrigue, or I don't want that, or, you know, blah, blah, blah. We're going to see, I think, even more of that.
Yeah. Did we get your check-in yet?
I know. We haven't heard from Daryl Lynn.
We did know, though. I feel like we should abandon our critique group thing and go with this theme. I'll do a brief check-in. So I too am super enjoying the streak. I think this is the most days I've ever written in a row, which are it's the 25th of January as we record this, so that's 24 days. Very exciting.
Nice.
I also had, I'm going to bring in other things. I got to sit in on Eric Witchie's Fiction Fluency Seminar just started, and I got to sit in on the first one, which was about creating the foundations of your writing life, which as many times as I've heard, you know, those kinds of things, I really found a lot of value in that, and a lot of, he approaches it in such an interesting way, really looking at, you know, like down to, you know, the physiology of the body and the brain and, you know, what are the times of day that, you know, like really getting granular on what times of day work for you and understanding that and how do you build your life around those kinds of things. So that was really wonderful. And I think it's going to be coming out as a recording very soon, I hope. So it would be definitely worth watching. And I also, I forgot to mention this last week, I am sitting in on Nina Creaky Hoffman's short story class as well. So I have this double incentive of getting some stories written in the next 6 weeks. So it's
been nice. I just want to say I hate you a little bit right now.
I know. Get to work with these two amazing people. Yeah, it's pretty fun. And I'm trying to tell myself it is not because I want to avoid actually writing things that I'm taking so many classes. But actually, I'm not taking them. I have to be there anyway, but because that's my job. But
the sacrifices you make.
I know, right? so the real secret is all of the programming is about who I want to work with. So
that's okay.
Don't tell anybody that, but I do it. It's like, I try to think like, what does the world need in creative writing instruction? And then I bring those folks in. So there you go. Anyway, that's my update. I'm pretty excited.
That's that sounds like some wonderful preparation. And don't think of it as avoiding writing. Think of it as like you're preparing the field so that when you plant your little writing seeds, they will grow and that's blossom and become amazing stories.
That's it. Mm-hmm. Actually, it is. Well, Nina's class, we have to write a short story every week. So there is real writing going on. And I think that's really what I wanted is I like having a container or somebody holding space for me to do some writing. So, I really like that part, but also it's the amazing Nina Creaky Hoffman, and I get to be in a room with her for a couple hours each week, so that's pretty cool.
Oh, you know, I'm thinking about it, Darlene. I have an idea for a free class for high school students that would be about digital publishing for folks that like basically don't have any resources. Mm-hmm. So, like high school students or I don't know, but I had this site. This came out of a conversation on Facebook that was coming out of that author earnings thing that was floating around. And like, how do you serve folks that are, how do you get folks to kind of be aware of the opportunities that are out there now, but approach it in a way that can kind of meet their goals using a lot of free tools that are available. Like if you have a laptop and an internet connection, you can publish a book. Obviously you want to do it in a smart way depending on your goals, but
yeah, I don't think you need to restrict that audience to high schoolers because I think pretty much
anybody would be interested writers. In that.
Yeah would be interested.
Well, when I've kind of done classes like this before, people that are not comfortable with technology I think have a really difficult time, like what is Amazon or why would I want to publish digitally or but you're right, I think there is a this is I don't want to get too off topic, but while I was thinking about it I wanted to mention it. Like if those are things you're interested in, I would be interested in developing something like that. I think there might be a nexus, especially with some different maybe folks we have on campus. They're kind of working with those students, like from a writing perspective. Mm-hmm. So that would be something to maybe look at down the road.
Awesome. Let's talk about that.
That would not be bad advice. And we were going to talk about bad advice.
Yes. Okay.
Bad advice. Okay. So Molly, you have things to say about bad writing advice.
I do have bad. I have some bad advice to give everybody. This is so exciting. Okay. So I wanted to start our bad advice. And this is more of like bad critiques that you will get in writing groups. And so the first bad critique or the first bad thing that you can say to a writer when you're giving them feedback is the, I liked it. It was fine. It's okay. And that is like the writerly kiss of death because it's the equivalent of, you know, when you have to do those surveys and they're like how happy you are from 1 to 10 and you hit 5, that's like hitting 5 because you're like, I'm not doing anything well. I'm not doing anything that I can fix. It's just nothing. You have now vanilla pudding my story.
You vanilla pudding to my story. I just imagine people flipping spoons of vanilla.
I like vanilla.
Oh, well, it's great. Vanilla is a really important base that you can add things to. So this is why for me this is kind of number 10 on the list of things not to say if you're giving a critique. And like I said, it's just because it gives the writer nothing to work with. It's basically like, did you even read it? I can't tell. Like.
And that's what I hear when I hear that kind of critique. My thing is just I don't think you engage with the story, and so that's fine. Like me as the writer, did I not hook you? Like I didn't do something in the beginning that didn't hook this particular reader.
Yeah. You know?
But,
or yeah, it's just so the second thing that I have of
wait,
not
should we
people.
Should we counter that with
oh, the
like
what?
How would you? How do you make that more effective? Because it does seem like, and you know, is but you know, because I think we all start with like, what's my overall reaction? I liked it. It was good. But more effective than that would be, oh my gosh, this moment, that vision when the two dragons are entwining, or you know, whatever it is, finding, or I just you know, the action scene. I was on the edge of my seat. Whatever it is that is really working. Would be a way to pull out what would be effective feedback. Is that kind of, would that kind of be the, how you
yeah, I think that's kind of, that's actually a really good way to talk about this, to say like, here's the thing not to do and here's how to do it right. And we used to have a couple that came to our writers group for a while, George and Joy. And one of the things George would always start out with, which was just beautiful, is he would say, this is, so he would say, here's the thing that I liked the most. And that was the first thing that he would say. And then he would just start out, and it set the tone for all of the rest of his feedback, because the very first thing out of his mouth was like, this is the best thing about this. And even if he, you know, 100% didn't like the story, he would always find at least one good thing to say about it. That was really helpful. So yeah, so a specific, you know, moment of this is what I liked really helps. Thanks, Marilyn.
Yeah. You're welcome.
I think that's really important too when giving feedback, because you're right, that's not, and like what is the intention of the story? You know, that's why I think it's helpful to me to know where you're trying to sell it, or what, you know, if I'm just trying to affect emotion in the reader and you say it was fine, like I didn't, if my goal was to help you feel something, I didn't accomplish that goal, right? So what is potentially going to get there as far as, I like this scene, but let's talk about how we moved up to it, or, you know, I wasn't as engaged in this part, or things like that. Yeah, I almost sometimes wish people just wouldn't even read the story and give me feedback if that's what they're going to say. Yeah. I don't know.
Well, to me, honestly, if that's the only feedback that I get, I kind of feel like either you didn't read it and you just don't want to hurt my feelings and tell me you got too busy, or like you skimmed it over and you're just like, eh, like I'll forget this tomorrow, and which is kind of even worse because that's where my mind goes. so that's just me. Darylyn, did you have something that you wanted to add before we move on? Okay.
Yes, if I can figure out how to unmute my microphone 27 times. Well, I do want to add something here, and that is I know that especially if we're like, if one is still kind of new to writing and critiquing it, you don't always know, like, well, I read it and I like some parts of it, but I was kind of met on it. And I don't really know exactly what. This is the opportunity for you, the writer, to, you know, like if your response really is, it was fine, is to dig in and see like, ooh, I did really like how the character was working in this spot, or I did really, you know, feel at the end here, but to also kind of maybe use this as an opportunity for you to diagnose why wasn't I engaged with the with the character, or I got confused on the plot here, and therefore kind of missed how much pathos was happening over here with the, you know, with the character and her puppy later, and so it did come off as kind of meh. And that's where it's really good to kind of dig in. And pay attention to, oh, this really does work at this level, but I kind of missed it because I was confused because of this problem over here. So,
well, and I think that goes back to one of the things that we learned very early on from Eric Witchie is the idea that when you're doing critiques, it's not so much that you are doing a favor for the other writer, but they're actually doing a favor for you by allowing you to read and critique their story, because you're never going to see the mechanics and the structure of a story as well in your writing as you will in somebody else's writing. Like in somebody else's writing, it's super clear when things don't make sense. But in your writing, you're like, all of this is beautifully written and completely well set up.
There's all the information that you have in your brain, like the intention that didn't make it onto the page, you know?
So my second thing of, you know, what not to say is, I don't like genre, you know, whatever the genre is, so I didn't like your story. And for me, the reason that this is problematic is if you're in a writer's group, especially if you're in a writer's group or any sort of critique situation where you're critiquing more than one specific genre, you are going to read a lot of stories that aren't necessarily your cup of tea or coffee or craft beer or whatever. And James, we were just talking about that earlier, how specific and niche some of these stories can get. And you're like, I want my bear shifter cozy romance story that takes place under a full moon, but there aren't werewolves. You're like, okay, that is your thing. But it's really, really specific. And so if somebody is writing a story with vampires in it, you know, you can't just say, I didn't like the story, and therefore there's nothing in it of virtue.
and to me, that is like one of those lines we talk about, you know, amateur versus professional. you know, I want to know how any story works. I've learned so many things from other genres that, and you're right, in the way that readers approach a story and what they expect and the things that I'm thinking about versus what another reader might be thinking about. I've learned a ton from that. I mean, I still want to learn how to make mysteries work because I actually love science fiction mystery. I just don't get to read a lot of it, you know? And so getting an opportunity to talk to the writers that are doing different things and respecting what they're doing and learning from it. I feel like it's something I have encountered more with folks that are like in love with a certain genre and really want to do that, but haven't kind of broadened their minds to other techniques and tools that are out there, you know? And the more they become aware of those things, the more open they become to it.
Yeah.
But again, it's kind of laziness too, where I think like, okay, did you not have time and you're just thinking of an excuse for this or you didn't understand what the story was doing? And that's fine. Like if I think there are plenty of genres where people didn't understand or they don't get the tropes in the genre. And so they just don't, it's not interesting to them.
I think the other thing for me, like in a writer's group, when I hear this type of feedback is, you know, like, this isn't my thing, this isn't my story. So I didn't like it at all. And therefore I have nothing to say about it. For me, the reason that that's problematic is sort of what it's saying is, I'm reading this like I'm a reader, not that I'm reading this like a fellow writer who's capable of looking at the bones underneath the story and talking to you about the structure and the craft and, you know, how did you accomplish the things that happened in your story? How did you move the plot forward? How, you know, what was the character's consistency? Did they have an emotional arc? All of those writer questions that we don't expect readers to pick up on consciously, but other writers should be able to find those. So when somebody's saying like, I don't like this type of story, so I don't like your type of story, what it's saying to me is you're reading this like a reader, not a writer.
I'm just saying, I don't like you, basically.
I don't like
you. I don't like the way you look. I will sometimes, I'll try to preface it like, hey, I don't read this kind of story, so please take my, you know, my feedback at face value because I might not be picking up what you're laying down, you know,
which is a very gracious way of saying it. You can say like, you know, I don't read shifter werewolf romances that much. Bears are more my thing. And so like, I may not get all the tropes in the genre. And that's helpful if you're doing it sort of from the state of humility and saying like, you know, this is me, it's me, not you. Rather than just being very dismissive and saying like, you didn't please me and therefore your story isn't worthy of my time.
Why does this story exist?
I think I want to just go a little further with that because we do encounter those stories that I really don't read romance and I struggle with the romance writer in our group. And it's not that I just don't get it and therefore I don't like it. But how do you give effective feedback to that beyond, and James, I like your thing of like, yeah, I don't read this, so take it with a giant salt lick. But how do you help them with their work or how do you approach it so that you can give them some craft stuff? But also understanding like the level of maybe characterization or how we're signaling, you know, emotional changes in romance may be very different than how it might be signaled in a more mainstream story or in a different, you know, in sci-fi fantasy where we're not, you know, I don't know how. So what are your thoughts there to help give that effective feedback so that you can help or at least learn for yourself?
So what I try to do is to find the things that are working. I try to, when I read the story, I try to figure out like, what is the author's intent and where are the places where I can see that intent, like threaded through the story that, okay, like this scene is intended to, you know, get the two lovers together. And here's how you did it. And that was really, you know, well done. And I didn't expect it, but it still worked out. So if I can find something that I can say, like, this is what's working, instead of saying, like, I didn't like it, it doesn't, like, because that's kind of, to me, that's more of a brush off. And I totally hear you because I don't enjoy the romance genre very much myself. And I tend to read a lot of romance books just as part of critiquing and editing. So what I learned to do is to look for the things that are working and look for the things that you can compliment people on, especially if it's not your genre.
Yeah, I agree. Like,
and so, go ahead.
I was just going to say, asking for, like, if you know I'm not your ideal reader, then are there things I can help you look for within the text, you know, before you even get it? Which I think is one of those, depending on the group you're in, if you have a relationship with folks where, hey, if we're working on ongoing work, or we all know each other pretty well, and I like being in the group, I like reading your work, but, you know, I can't give you this kind of feedback, so tell me what you'd like to hear. Well, not tell me what you'd like to hear, but tell me what you'd like me to focus on, potentially, as opposed to some groups that really follow that Clarion model where you get the story and the story exists, it's its own thing, and there's no other communication about the story except for what's in the on the page, you know. And I think those are different kinds of critiques where I think you want to respect everyone's time, and it's not really valuable to have a critique that's not useful if I don't know what you're trying to do here, you know.
Yeah.
For me too, that kind of gets to thinking about bad advice. Like, some of the, like, I am commercially focused. I do want to sell my work. Like, yeah, I want my work to be artistic, and I would love to be at a place at some point in my life where I can chip away at that perfect diamond, and I don't care what, you know, my audience thinks. But I sometimes think that we get in these sort of critique cycles where we're not focused on an outcome. We're just focused on kind of reshaping the story based on what's there without its intention or its intended market or any of those things. And I think that leads to a lot of bad critique or advice about a story in itself, you know, because we don't know where it wants to go. We don't know who it's trying to please. We don't know what it's trying to say. All we can do is kind of look at what's there. And then you get 100, you know, not 100, but you get 10 different opinions on what that story should do. And if you're a new author who doesn't necessarily know, and you don't know who you're trying to sell it to, you just end up going all over the place because you don't know what to do with the story, you know. And I find that to be really counterproductive, and it's something that I did a lot in the beginning because I didn't know what. Like, I would write the story, and then I was trying to find the market afterwards. Okay, well, maybe this will fit at Uncanny, or maybe I could send this to Asimov's, or maybe, you know, blah, blah, whatever.
Yeah.
And I find that to, for me at least, to be a way, kind of not an effective use of time. But that was one of my frustrations with, you know, critique groups over time. So for me, that leads to a lot of unintentional bad advice, I would say.
What I find as an editor is it's actually really helpful for me because I already know, because the publisher has something in mind of where this book is going. So I will always talk to the author ahead of time and say, who, like, in your mind, who is your target audience? Like, who do you think will buy this book? Who will you like this book? And then all of my editing, you know, all of my suggestions on revisions are with that intended audience in mind. So, you know, if it's intended for, you know, this is intended for teenage boys, well, we're going to structure it a little bit differently, and we're going to, you know, focus it a little bit differently than it's intended for, you know, the knitting club. And that's really helpful to have, kind of, not necessarily, you know, especially if you're a new writer and you don't know the market, so you're like, I don't know, just somebody read it, please. But just have your intended reader in mind, and you're like, if nobody else is happy, at least, you know, my friend Susie will like this.
Right. I would say that is a good piece of advice. Like, who is your ideal reader, and hit that person, you know? As long as you please them, you know.
All right, no more good advice. Let's move on to the bad advice.
Right.
All right.
Darylynn, what bad advice have you been told in your career?
I start like, so much. I'm thinking back specifically to a critique I received, and it was actually from an instructor about a piece that, you know, my project is to write women's stories, and I had written this story that was about a 10-year-old girl, and she was reflecting against a cousin who had committed suicide, who was a male, and like an older cousin who committed suicide. And so I get this advice back from the professor, who's like, no, you need to change your main character to a boy, and he needs to be 13 and not 11, and it needs to be about this. And it was really jarring to get this advice about, like, wow, you completely didn't understand what this project was about at all. And I was a young enough writer that I didn't know how to probably articulate that, but like how and how to deal with when somebody just completely misfires on and says, you know, like kind of wants to change your whole story and project. That was really kind of hard and to navigate. I didn't really know how to do it at the time. Like now I would be like, well, I can just throw that advice away. But at the time I was like, wait, dude, you know, it was kind of crushing because it was like, wait, how do I take something that is such a big change to a story and deal with it. So I don't know that there, I don't know where that's going exactly, but
there's so many things there. Cause you've got a person in a teacher role that you, mm-hmm. you have to trust that they know what's best for your story. But then it kind of goes back to what Molly was talking about, where I would wonder if that person even read the story carefully. You know, because obviously they brought their own idea to what it should be as opposed to what it is. And how can we do that more effectively, maybe?
Right. Well, and I guess that's to say, you know, I'm sure I've completely misread other folks' work as well given on a particular day, and how to, maybe this is advice on like how to protect yourself when you do receive something like that. Later in my writing career, I was pitching at Willamette Writers Conference, my book, which is about these four women in this very particular thing. And one of the agents, like everybody else totally got it, but one of the agents is like, well, how would you feel about taking the four characters and stuff, having four point of view characters, make it four books and make it more like romances? And I was like, what?
How would you feel about writing four different books?
Yeah. But also just, you know, like completely change the genre from what it's trying to do to romances and whatnot. And, you know, and of course by then it's like, yeah, I can see that you're just being manipulative or who knows what your thing is, but it was really easy to brush that one off. And because I had some experience and understood what I was doing, but I think early in your career, when you get that, it is having that, like you need to have a really clear sense and not get taken on all these different directions of what you're doing. So,
yeah. Oh no, that's a really good point. And I think it's something, especially like you mentioned, newer writers or writers with less experience in critique groups, or even people that are in classes, you know, we sort of have that, you know, those famous experiments that were done about how do we react to authority figures. And you have this person who's a professor or a famous writer or somebody who's teaching a class who's an authority figure on writing, and they're telling you, you know, you're doing it wrong. And it takes a lot of confidence in yourself, or just, you know, flat out arrogance, to be like, no, I'm not, I don't have to listen to you. And to try to find out, you know, when is that, when is the advice just something that you do need to hear and you don't want to, and when is it just something that you don't need to hear regardless?
Yeah.
But I think, yeah, if anybody is telling you you need to fundamentally change the entire story and write something different, then that's probably bad advice. Because if, you know, if that's the story that they want to read, they could go and write it themselves. This is the story that you wrote. That's a different story. Mm-hmm.
I guess my first question is always, are you going to pay me for that?
Yeah,
right.
Like, are you paying for this? Then I will, you know, but that's part of the whole art, you know, whatever, depending on what your intention is. But I one thing I will say about critiquing in general or writing advice is that I've really come around where, rather than just rolling over a piece of work again and again and again, I would just rather take that idea about writing for, take this core idea, just go write something new. Like for me, that's a better use of my time than trying to like change something that already exists, you know, because there may be a market for that thing that already exists somewhere.
Well, I think this also kind of goes back to the writer accountability piece, is that if you know eventually you have a timeline and somebody else is going to take this writing away from you, you can only, you know, tinker with it for so long and then it's going to be gone. And this is one of those things where I like to have the relationship, or I like to see the relationship with either a writer's group or a publisher or an editor or somebody who's going to tell you, like, by Tuesday, I don't care what it looks like, it's going to be gone. And you have to get it done.
Uh-huh.
And you can't sit there all day long and be like, vermilion or red.
Well, in a way, like, writing advice becomes bad the longer it goes on, right? Like, we've been looking at this manuscript for a year. Like, it's time to do something with it or do something new. Like, I don't know what else to tell you.
Yeah.
You know? where I think it can be a little bit like writing to the idea of critiquing becomes a little bit self-defeating. I don't know how else to put that, I guess, but there are writers that I would love to see them. They've been working on something for years and I want to see them produce more work, you know, like the answer to fixing that manuscript is to write another one. And, but how do you do that when you're trying to, like, that's not the focus of why they came to a meeting or whatever.
That one hurts my heart a little. I feel like it's looking at me. No, but no. Actually, I think that's really that is a fair thing. I also, looking at that from the perspective of I had one I've been hanging on to. How do you let that go? Because I find it really challenging to move on, having had this obsession with this manuscript for some time. That's my project of writing a bunch of short stories so that I can get it out of my system. But that is really hard when you've, you know, I guess sunk cost theory, like you've invested a lot and you are beginning to see it more and more. How do you let go and just write something new? Maybe that could be a topic for a new podcast. Cause
I know that's a bigger, we're almost out of time and that's a big question.
Yeah.
All right. That is a big question, but I don't know if we've heard any bad advice from James yet. So what is your bad writing advice before we go?
I know. I just write what's in your heart.
Oh God.
I hear, like, when I think about like maudlin advice that I've received that was unproductive, that kind of frustrates me. I mean, not having intention. And I suppose part of that comes from where I am in my life. And if I were, and I've definitely been there, like at points in my life where just write whatever comes into your head, you know, or write when the muse strikes you. And that's not what has produced work for me. Like I'm a very project-oriented person. I like to have a goal and an outcome. And I can shape a project if I'm working towards a goal. And that helps calm my brain, right? Like if I'm just going to blah, whatever, it helps me feel like I'm actually, because then when, this is something I guess we could get into when it's time to let something go. Like if I work towards something, like I'm trying to hit a market or a reader and it doesn't work, well, then I can evaluate that and move on to the next thing. And it makes it easier for me to do that. But if I'm just creating something that's, you know, somehow a reflection of my heart or my soul, how do you pin that down? You know, how do you pin that down for that time in your life, for that thing you were writing? So that kind of advice always frustrates me. Because I feel like it just frustrates other people and it doesn't give them something that's actually useful for them. And then also one thing I was thinking about too, that's just, I've always focused on show, don't tell. But one of the things that I've really come to learn in the last couple of years when I'm writing like this more commercial stuff, sometimes readers don't want that. they don't want to interpret. And this gets to like what level people are reading at. Like if they're reading for entertainment and really thinking about what I'm writing. And obviously I'm not going to actually tell everything, but there are times when that's the quickest way to get that point of the story out is to just tell what's happening, you know? But then even if I'm trying to finish a project, like sometimes I'll just write it that way and then go back and change some things. But you realize with some readers, like you got to bang them over the head because things that you thought were pretty apparent where you were trying to show what the character was feeling or doing or why, or their motivation just goes right over people's heads, you know? And that gets to writing to a critique group versus writing to your reader. So that's something I think about a lot, the show don't tell. Like, I still think that's very solid, basic advice. But I think that thinking about your reader, thinking about your audience, what they want, sometimes they just want to know what's in the character's head, you know. And so adding adverbs and those things that, you know, we don't ever want to do. Like, sometimes an adverb is the best way just to get that out. He said angrily. Okay, got it.
There we go.
Francine Prose has a really great article about show, don't tell, and how it's wrong. And it's not that you can't tell, it's that you tell actively with, you know,
good point.
Beautiful active language instead of he felt mad. So
that's a good point.
Although some days you're right. You just need like a quick punch to get through to the next thing, and telling is fine.
So. Yep.
All right. I think
have we given lots of editorial advice here for this one? So maybe just jump into our intentions for next week, or did you have something you really wanted to share, Molly?
No, I would probably expound on the whole show, don't tell, because that's as an editor, I think I do spend a lot of time kind of picking out different parts of the story and saying, okay, summarize this. So it'll be, you know, like, here's this big, huge section that everything is shown, and it doesn't need to be. You know, you have the character, a recent example was a character who walks up on a porch and opens a door, and it took 2 pages for that to happen.
It's a very creaky porch.
And it was incredibly well described, but there was no point for it. And so me as an editor, I'm saying, like, this has got to be 2 sentences, 3 tops. And then there are other times where I'm saying, okay, you know, you are brushing over the biggest thing in the book. Like, everything has been building up to this. And he said angrily is the line that we get. I'm like, no, this needs to be 4 pages of, like, describing everything. So it's not that you shouldn't show or tell. It's that you need to think about the weight of the things in your story and where do you want the weight to be. And think of your words as having physical weight. Where do you want those big pieces of weight to hold down your story and to make a reader's pause and consider what's going on? So do both.
Good point. That's our advice. Do all of it.
Do everything. Do it all perfectly. All right. Now you're
All right. So, Daryl Lynn, what's going on? What are you doing next week?
I am going to write every single day, and I'm also going to write a brand new short story by Thursday. So, very exciting.
Nice. What word count are you shooting for with the short story?
Well, the limit is 3,000, so I will write at least 3,000 words between Friday and Thursday. So, yeah.
Nice. Nice.
Cool.
Molly?
Oh, okay. I am writing every single day, and I'm finishing a short story. I don't know if I'll get it done next week, depending on what my word count is. But I have used Nina's story cookbook, and I rolled up a really fun urban fantasy story that I'm working on.
Yay!
Oh, cool. Yay. Cool. Yeah, writing every day, and really just closing out the main arc of this book, and then going back and adding some side stuff. I need to increase the scope of the story, and I'm doing that with some side characters that are doing some different things. And so it's kind of fun because the main character has had a lot of events happening, and now I get to go back and add side characters that affected those events, but she doesn't know about it. So it's going to be kind of fun to play with that. So, and then I don't know if I talked about this novella. I mentioned it earlier, this novella I want to narrate, as a reader magnet for my email newsletter.
Mm-hmm.
And so I really would like to make that happen. I don't know if that's going to work out based on other commitments, but finding some time to record some reading is something I'm hoping to get done. So we shall see.
I wonder if you could sneak into, like, the recording studios at the campus, the university campus. And, like,
I've been thinking about that, yeah. Because they do have some really nice studios, so we could go steal some time there.
Yeah.
Cool.
Cool. All right. Well, thanks very much for calling in. It was really great talking to everybody.
Yeah.
Thanks, everybody.
All right. Okay. Yep.
Great week.
See you later. Bye-bye.
Bye.